are Art and Doris Holste, and we spent 2 years in Papua New Guinea working with Lutheran World Ministries volunteer program. We applied through New York and then were asked to come to Papua New Guinea. And over there, my work was with the Lutheran Development Service, which was working on various development projects, water supplies, airstrips, and wire footbridges.
I might tell you that Art worked in Kansas with the Soil Conservation Service and with the Black Plains of Kansas, so that was quite a contrast in going to Papua New Guinea in this very rugged mountainous country. And we came here to Holden in 1982, and we're on staff for 4 summers. He is in charge of lawns and landscaping, and I as head housekeeper, and I made many trips up to the laundry, and he on these slopes mowing, and we hiked, and we feel now that God prepared us for Papua New Guinea by coming to Holden.
I think with that, we will start with the slide. We entitled our program here Papua New Guinea, Land of Contrast. Before we get into the various contrasts, to those of you that are not too familiar with where Papua New Guinea is located, it's in the Southwest Pacific, Australia, down in here in the Southwest, and then Papua New Guinea is just to the north of it. Papua New Guinea is made up of 2 countries, each of which is about the size of California. And New Guinea is located about, well, the part where we were is about 5 degrees south of the equator. So it's a very tropical country.
Papua New Guinea is the second largest island in the world.
The country of Papua New Guinea is made up, before 1975, of 2 territories, Papua and New Guinea. They were actually under the rule of Australia, but in 1975 they got their independence on September 15th, so it's just 15 years since they've been an independent country. It is made up of 19 different provinces now. All these different colors represent the different provinces, and they're divided by high mountains going down through here, more mountains back in here, lots of mountains all over the country. Large river here entering into the sea at Lae, where we were stationed. Pinchhoffen out on this point, many of you probably heard of it. Port Moresby down in the south, Madang on the north, Wewak up along the coast here, and what was Hollandia during World War II was up here in what then was the Dutch New Guinea, but now is Eringaia. Papua New Guinea has a population of about 3.5 million people.
The southern, the lower part was Papua, and the upper part was the territory of New Guinea, and it was in 1975 they became an independent country. They got their independence from Australia, and so it's since then that the country is called Papua New Guinea.
The areas that we worked in were quite scattered. We did a lot of work out on this part of it, on some of these islands. These are all part of Papua New Guinea too, New Britain and Solomon Islands, New Ireland, and did some up in the highlands, some down to the south of Lae. So we got to quite a few different areas, worked in about 40 different villages in the time, the 2 years that we were there, September 85 to September 87. They have the parliamentary form of government. This is their new Parliament building was completed in 84.
This is the mosaic on the end of the main front of the building, and which depicts the culture of Papua New Guinea. And notice that the writing is in English on it. Their government is now going toward the English language. However, the country is basically, they have 700 different languages because of the very mountainous country. The people live very isolated from each other in these very, very rugged mountains. And so they are just beginning to get teaching English in the schools, and the children up to sixth grade are learning English. However, many of the older people do not speak English, and so we learned the pidgin language when we were there. You will notice how they have the culture on it is depicted in this. There's the people working in the gardens, and the cassowaries, and the pigs, and the snakes, and all of their the big feathered headpieces that they wear for their sing-sings and so forth.
Since they have a parliamentary form of government, they do have elections. While we were there, they had elections. Their polling places are a little different from ours. And also, the election takes much longer. It takes a lot of months to get an election finished because they take the ballots from village to village rather than have the people come so far to one place.
There's no way you can get them to the people except to bring them to them by foot. And this is at the city of Lae, and so you can see they're wearing quite normal clothing there. But as we get show the slides that are in the villages, you will notice the contrast.
A little bit on the topography. As I mentioned, very mountainous, many really steep mountains and
notice the trails.
Valleys down there and trails up along the side. They do have some flat areas along the rivers and a few cattle. Very few cattle, though, in the country.
Because it's too rugged.
On the coast near Finschhafen, very beautiful coconut trees, a lot of lagoons and places to go.
And this, in World War II, that's where all the soldiers came in and out of. And there, they say they had like 30 theaters along there. But now it's all grown up with vegetation.
When you fly over, you see all these colors, but if you go snorkeling, you really get to see them. Just get your head underwater a little bit, and just another world.
A lot of our missionary children love to go scuba diving in areas like this. This is the world's largest turtle, the leatherback turtle, which we saw when we went in January, the time of the year when they lay their eggs. This turtle is about seven, when its flippers out, is about 7 feet wide, and about its body is about 7 feet long.
Is he alive?
And he's alive, yes. And we watched him come up out of the water and lay its eggs after it dug its hole with the flippers, mm-hmm. and then covered them up. He dug a hole about 2 feet deep, laid about 100 eggs, and then covered them up and went back down into the water. And they say it takes about 2 months for those eggs to hatch.
Is this in daytime or night?
It's at nighttime. They say they always lay their eggs at night.
They come out of the water like 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and you just walk along the coast till you find one.
It was a beautiful moonlight night that night, and we did have some cameras.
But some of the nationals showed us where to walk. You can tell by the feet.
The nationals are barefooted.
Were there many of them?
No,
not many. Every night a few in the month of January. I don't know just how many.
Did you ever see them hatch?
Yeah. Well, we have not seen. No, we did not see them hatch. This particular area, the sandy beach is just right, and these turtles will come from other, from the Pacific Ocean, from a long ways off from other countries to lay their eggs here. They just have various certain places where they lay their eggs every year, and this was one of them.
Do they use the turtles for anything?
No, just the eggs.
They eat the eggs.
They eat the eggs. And that concerns us because we hope, we keep hoping that they don't eat all the eggs.
There are many shells along the coast too. We brought a few along home, but these large conch shells are used in one way as musical instruments. They drill a hole through where the boy is blowing, and if you get half a dozen or so of those, and people are playing them, just sound just like an organ.
At the same time, just like a, just like a chord organ. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful tone. They played hymns on them that sounded kind of like they were playing on a chord organ.
Typical village in the mountains, they tend to build them on the ridges in order to be able to see their enemies better for protection. Usually built somewhat in a circle with a big open space so they can have their sing-sings, their dances, and so on there.
And usually their church is right in the center area.
Gardens are out on the slopes then.
Whatever the bush, how their houses are made of depends on what's grown in the area. Here's another village, and you, here's the schoolhouse. Sometimes they will have metal roofs on those. And if there's a schoolhouse with a metal roof, that means that metal roof, that all the roofing had to be carried in. There is no way, there are no roads to these villages. It's unbelievable what those people carry into the villages.
Usually if they have a metal roof, they also have gutters on it and mount a tank to catch the water for drinking or washing, so they have rain tanks.
Because in Papua New Guinea, they carry all of their water. That's one reason we were there, was to pipe clean water closer to the villages for cooking and drinking and so forth.
There are lots of artwork. In our program Saturday, we'll concentrate more on art and various things, but just to give you some idea of what they have, this represents some of their old art. They are Christians now. About 80% of the country is Christian, but they have their posts carved and they're around the outside of the church, but they're not thinking about the spirits from the past, but they're thinking of the Christian religion, and they're getting protection while they're inside.
Yeah, they celebrate the fact that now they can worship the true God, and that they can are protected by Him rather than to put all of their belief in the spirits of the past. When we were in the village of Marawaka, we met this man and this young boy, and this is very common when you go out to the out into the villages to still meet people with bones through their noses or quills, and you know, notice all their, how they like to adorn their bodies with nature. They live very, very close to nature. These bones are bones probably from the big cassowary birds.
But yet the son is dressed in, look like
it's
jeans
normal.
And shirt.
Yes, yeah, and some of the children will wear, you see everything in Papua New Guinea. Sometimes they'll get a bale of clothes from this country, and some of the children will wear those clothes. And here is a woman, she's wearing some of the bark cloth to protect her head from the sun and or from the rain. And there she's got a quill in her nose, and she's wearing one of the kina shells from the ocean. And what is wrong with her mouth, we don't know. But in the primitive areas, they don't have doctors, and so they cope with what their problems are.
It may just be the betel nut juice or buai. Mm-hmm. When they chew that, they're spitted just like blood.
And there's two little children getting protection from the bark cloth. And notice a lot of them just wear a little, maybe a pair of shorts or a grass skirt. You never, just whatever they happen to have. Or nothing. You see many children with wearing nothing.
This is the city of Lae where we were stationed. Small airstrip down here that was in use at that time. After a year, they had to abandon it and go out to the airport about 35 miles out, which wasn't nearly as handy for us because we flew a lot. But everything was green all the time. It was warm.
Beautiful. Lush. It was just beautiful. The tropical plants and warm sunshine and lots of rain, and everything was lush and green.
See, there are about 60,000.
Is there a golf course right in the middle there?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, there's a golf course. I'm trying to back up.
This?
Yeah. Okay. Don't back up.
Well, the first house one was the house where we lived in. It was right in Lee, just a few, maybe like a mile from the Lutheran headquarters building. And then the next one was our shower. It was a bucket, but it had a sprinkle nozzle underneath, and it had a rope on it, and you just pulled. You'd fill your bucket with water, and then you would heat the water in a tea kettle, because we did have a little gas bottle. There you are. So this was our missionary house. And it, as you can see, it was a beautiful tropical area with a lot of banana trees and coconut trees and so forth. It was only about a half a mile from Martin Luther Seminary.
What kind of animals did you have around your house, if any?
Well, not particularly. There were some tree kangaroos and the neighbors, and there were dogs and
frogs.
But there were what?
Frogs.
Frogs, things like that. Let's go on to the next one. But here's this shower bucket, and then when you filled your bucket with water, warm water, lowered it. You could run cold water in, but to have a warm shower, you had to heat some water to add to your bucket, into the bucket. And then you'd open this sprinkler nozzle then you could take a shower that way. So one bucket of water, and you had your shower. So I keep back in Kansas where we're short of water. I keep telling my husband we need to have every family just have a shower bucket. And it would rain 180 inches a year at Lay. So it would rain a lot, and then it would soak away. The soil was quite sandy. And then the sun would come out, and it seemed like you could just see things grow. It was very humid, but it was it was usually in the 80s for temperature, and it really wasn't too hot, too bad. And we enjoyed tropical fruit there a lot. We grew some of our own pineapple. We planted a papaya tree, which grew this tall in 1 year, and there's a papaya almost ready to be picked. And lots of bananas, and many different kinds of bananas. They say there's over 50 different varieties of bananas in Papua New Guinea. These kind of red-skinned ones were very sweet. They had pineapple, passion fruit, and star fruit, and lemons, and oranges, and mangoes, and lots. It was really a delight. And Papua New Guinea has some of the most beautiful tropical shrubs, and it's also known for its many, many beautiful butterflies. Art spent a lot of time trying to get pictures of butterflies, and we were told there if you get them in a cool place, catch them and keep them in a cool place, that or get them into something cool that would be easier. But we didn't hear about that until we were ready to come home.
We did lots of traveling by plane because the villages were very isolated, and some did have airstrips, or else we'd fly to the nearest village that had one, and then maybe hike for 4 or 5 hours to get where we wanted to go. But whenever we landed, the people all gathered around the plane to see who was coming, and just out of general curiosity.
This stands for Mission Aviation Fellowship. They are doing a wonderful ministry. They give plane rides in many different countries to missionaries for very low cost. And a lot of their time is volunteer.
The airstrip in another village, see the plane coming over the hill. Well, that's the end of the airstrip. The airstrips weren't level there like you expect them to be here. It might be on 10 or 12% slopes, and on the ends they usually dropped almost straight off on one end. Probably be a mountain on the other end.
Drop off, you could look down and you could just see down, down, down.
We spent quite a bit of time waiting for planes. There were a couple different times. We waited all day and it didn't come. Waited the next day and maybe it came.
We had heard about Papua New Guinea time, and it really tried out our patience. We wanted to accomplish lots of things, and then we could just sit and wait for a plane.
Well, here Doris is riding while we're waiting here.
And here he got tired of sitting on the ground, and so there was a wheelbarrow, so he sat in this wheelbarrow. That was something we had to get accustomed to in the Papua New Guinea bush houses. They have no chairs. So if we spent a week in a village, we would sit all week on the bamboo floor.
Planes were used a lot by agricultural workers that were also working with the Lutheran Development Service. This man is from Canada, and he was trying to teach the villagers how to raise these various animals, and taking sheep out to a village and chickens.
These are baby chicks in here. And so when we would go to a village, then they would make good use of the space in the back of the plane, and they would send along this. Art and I would ride up here with the pilot, and then we would hear chicks cheep, 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 and we would have, we never knew what we would have with us when we would ride into a village.
Also, to get to some of the villages, we used ships like this. This was a combination cargo and passenger ship, just used for coastal travel though. The Lutheran Church over there had a shipping company. They had seven, I think, ships of this kind. And while we were there, they got a larger ship for only passengers. We traveled off the coast many times, and also many times in this little boat here.
They would just fill up until, you know, just pile in, and no particular seats. You just climb in and sit down wherever you can find a place to sit.
No particular time, between 12 and 2:30 they would leave, so a lot of waiting involved there.
If it got full at 12, then they would take off, so you would go at 12 and wonder when it was going to take off. But this was the way we rode many times with these people, and that's one was an interesting thing to be in the minority in a country. In fact, when we would walk into the villages, sometimes the people would see me, the children would see me with my white hair, they would look scared, or the little children sometimes did cry. So, if I was sitting on the ground, they would come and feel it. And this is what we traveled in once in a while along the coast, just to get from to a village just along the coast. And then if this vehicle was going, the people would all pile in very quickly because very few people had cars, so that was a chance for them to get a ride.
Where they do have roads, there are very few bridges. Usually have to drive through the streams, so we had a four-wheel drive vehicle we could use whenever we had work to do in the village that was along the road. Very few were along the road.
That would have to be close to Lay. And sometimes we would have to hike for 6-7 hours to get to a village where we needed to go, and we'd have to cross a stream like this. And the first time I got to one of these streams, I thought, now how am I going to get across this? But the Papua New Guineans were the most helpful people, and they always gave lots of words of encouragement. This man says, don't worry about it, I'll help you across. I took off my hiking boots. They're just barefoot, they can just go, but I took off my hiking boots and he just helped me across. And here we are, we're coming back from a village. These are agricultural missionaries that were there from Mankato, Minnesota, Grant and Sherry Johnson, and this is Thomas Deckelman. He was the finance a person for the Lutheran Development Service, kept the books for the office.
He's from Germany. You note that almost everybody's carrying a walking stick, which is really handy because there was a lot of rain and the soil was kind of clay. It's really
slick.
The stick was very helpful. Many times, or several times, I guess about five times, we were able to get a helicopter to take us into a village. we work very closely with the government, and if they happen to have a helicopter going in the direction that we had some work to do, they would give us rides. Saved, well, 3 or 4 days, many times you could do in a day what would take a week otherwise, and travel by boat and then walk back and so on. So it was really helpful to have a helicopter.
I think this was the first time a helicopter ever landed in this village. It was interesting, when the pilot landed, he says, it is just so that the bush houses don't blow away when I come down, because, you know, all this air from this, but they were so excited that we were coming.
And most of the travel by the nationals, of course, still by outrigger canoes. These people come to the larger island. They live on a very small island, so they come to larger one to get fresh drinking water. Many of the islands don't have that.
They also still trade food, you know, from the, if they're living on an island, they have basically fish, but then they come to the coast to trade for vegetables and so forth.
We just had a few short rides on the outrigger canoe.
This is Sue Later, who is now working in the Global Mission Office in Chicago. After she left Papua New Guinea, she accepted a job to work there.
We're just going out to a larger boat that's out from the coastways.
And there's one of the islands that people live on. We were in a motorboat here. The Lutheran Church owned the motorboat, and were taking us out to an island, and we went right past this little island.
Missionaries that were stationed out in the bush had radios, so they would be in contact with the headquarters in Lae. And if we were going to be working in that village or one nearby, we would radio to them and tell them about when we would be there, and then they would get the word to the neighboring villages. This is Greg Meyer, who is at Mariwaka. He's from Minneapolis.
And he's a very good friend of Kate and Dave,
Farrell,
who are here in the village. They know that. Dave and Kate know Greg very well. This is one of the many kinds of bush houses that they have in Papua New Guinea. This is our son and his wife and little boy that came to visit us while we were there. But notice how heavy the grass is on that bush house. To give you an idea how their bush houses are constructed, there's one with a framework. The bush on a house lasts about 10 years, so every 10 years they replace it. Notice the way the framework is on the here, and then the floor is about here, this high, and a lot of times it is a bamboo that is split open and flat. And then the women are the hard workers in Papua New Guinea, and here they are carrying grass to replace on this bush house. And notice two of the ladies are wearing grass skirts, so you can see how much grass they use. And also this is a seminary student. He's weaving walls for a bush house. This one is cutting the framework. They don't go to there's no way to get lumber from town. They just make their lumber for the framework if they don't have bamboo nearby. This is the house where we slept in this particular village. Every time we'd go to a village, we would either stay at, if there was a missionary, they would invite us in to sleep at their house. Otherwise, we would be assigned a bush house. And this was the guest house. And at night, there would be pigs sleeping under us underneath here. And that is an outhouse in Papua New Guinea.
That's a fancy one.
Yeah. And the children often play with their pigs. The pig is their most prized animal in Papua New Guinea. And notice the necklaces. The little children love to wear their necklaces of seeds and shells, just like their parents. And one of the biggest joys for us in Papua New Guinea was sit around in the fire in the evenings and visit with the parents or the children and sing songs and just visit. And it was really exciting to be with them.
floors here are made of split bamboo. It's just split and spread out flat.
This is a Sunday morning right after church in the village. The children are just coming out of Sunday school. You will notice they do not have Sunday school lessons. This is the teacher. Well, they'll tell the stories and so forth. And I think of all the paper we waste and the Sunday school materials that we have in our churches that are wasted, and they don't have them. And many children don't even wear any clothes, as you can see there. So some of them. Here's our little grandchild that we've got came walking into this village. All the children had been in school. And the teacher and the children all came out to see this little white-skinned boy. This is a typical schoolhouse in Papua New Guinea, woven walls and so forth. This is another son of ours, the one that's up in Wisconsin, and his wife and children came to see us. And this is the inside. This is our granddaughter here, and you can see they just have some blackboards hung up on the wall and some roughly hewn benches for their school bench seats, and very few books. And this, we thought this was interesting to see how this young lady carried all these kettles. And so every morning, that's a daily ritual, is going for the Papua New Guineans to go to the stream or to a place where the water is coming from a spring like here. They just put bamboo into the side of the this wall, and they're washing their kettles here.
They cook over open fires. You can see how black the kettles get, but when they're washed up, they really shine. They use sand and gravel some, and then they also have a certain grass that is very rough that they use to scour with.
And they often wash their clothes and then just lay them out to dry like this. And the school children get their water in bamboo tubes and bring them up to the schoolhouse at recess time. And so they have drinking water at the school. And they love to have their pictures taken. When we would get a camera out, they'd all start running in to get their picture taken. And this is the bush house we stayed in this village. And here Art's getting himself a drink. Notice they'll tuck grass in on the end of the bamboo so the water stays clean. And then they just set it along the house or the schoolhouse. In many villages, they would cook extra food for us. And sometimes they would give us a lots of food to, and we could do our own cooking. And then we sometimes would have such a variety of food. It was really interesting, some of the kinds that we had never even cooked before. I have a Band-Aid on my leg. The tropical ulcer is a very common problem. And so if you get a little scratch from grass, hiking in the grass or something, you have to be sure and keep it clean. Notice the loads that the women carry in Papua New Guinea. And the men here and women are in the garden. This is sweet potatoes. The cow-cow or the sweet potato was their most common food. And here, this woman is going home from the garden with her vegetables to cook the evening meal, and she's tied her baby on top of all the vegetables and shading it with some vegetation. And more often, the mothers will carry their baby in a string bag, like I have laying up here. The women in the evenings are sitting and making string bags to carry the vegetables and things to and from the market or from the gardens and so forth. Here Art is surveying for a road to the airstrip, and it was through the heaviest vegetation, and so all these men and women were out with their machetes slashing this bush so that Art could survey. And at noon we all stopped for a little while and had sweet potatoes cooked over the fire for our lunch. And one young man is eating sugar cane here. That was a common snack, just to have a sugar cane in your bag. But notice how heavy the vegetation is here. A little boy was hanging. It was in some of the vines and swinging in them, just like Tarzan.
this village, you can see how the Outrigger canoes are lined up by each
house.
Bush house, there's an Outrigger canoe. These are going out to do some fishing. Here are a group of men together that are pulling in their net after having them out for a while.
So along the coast, the people do eat a lot of fish. This woman has just gotten married, so she's going to take her prized possession to her village. She's now going to be living in another village. And we watched her pull this. The women there take care of their precious pigs, and you lead them on a leash on the front leg. And we saw her take this pig up the ramp over here and into this boat. And the couple just helped her to lift that pig in the boat. It squealed and it settled down, and off they went.
Here we met several people coming up the road, and we were with one of the missionaries in that area, and he said that it was probably kind of a peace
compensation
gesture to the neighboring group of people.
Or it could be a friendly gesture.
Yeah. They may have had problems and they were trying to make peace, or they were just trying to be friendly with them.
But they got on.
Half of a pig they have just killed. Him. And here is the pig in the Highlands house, and this woman has a little room inside the house to make sure that her pig is safe at night. And these young men are hunting with bows and arrows. Some men still go out too, hunting with bows and arrows. The children there don't have bicycles and tricycles like our children do. And so they make their toys and things to play with. And they're one of the things that we saw many times is them pushing wheels on a stick. They say that Papua New Guineans never saw a wheel until after World War II from the airplanes.
Who cuts their hair?
They just cut each other's.
We didn't see the scissors.
I don't know how, but...
This boy has a ball that's carved from a real spongy tree trunk.
It would bounce like a rubber ball. Here they're playing basketball. They play many games just like our young people do here in the States. And notice the goal poles here. They're growing. They get so much rain that when they put a post in the ground, it sometimes grows. And this was a very common scene when you would fly and over the mountains to see the clouds moving in. So we usually did our flying early in the morning before the clouds did come in. But notice how heavily vegetated these mountains are. You'll have to try not to let this interfere. That's a reflection from the helicopter.
Ooh.
But just notice, you see this waterfalls down here? Art was trying to get to this village to survey for an airstrip, and he got this while he was in a helicopter. If he wouldn't have got a ride in this helicopter, he would have had to taken 5 days to walk to get to this village and back.
No, one way.
One way.
Here you can see how the airstrips are really limited for length, and this is just on top of the mountain. Here it drops almost straight down, and then about 1,500 feet over here, and then it goes right on up.
But we took off on these little airstrips many times, and you could just look endlessly down. You just go on faith when you ride with these.
Here we got into that area, the helicopter another time, did some more surveying for them. They've done lots of work, lots of digging already, but that's all by hand here.
There's no way to get machinery into these places.
But when you dig 6, 8, 10 feet, it takes a long time to get an airstrip.
They have dug for 2.5 years, and they figure it will take at least that much longer.
Let's put on another reel. If you have a few questions now while I'm doing that.
How tall are those people?
You'll follow?
How tall are
those people? They're quite short, quite small. They're small people. In fact, when we got back to the States, our people in the U.S. really seemed big. You know, after living with them for 2 years. What was really exciting is to see vibrant those people are.
Art, can you raise that picture on the screen? In the back, it's really hard to see.
Oh, yes. Now this, oops, there, thanks. This is the wirefoot bridge that the government put in. And but just to show you what rushing streams there are between two really steep mountains. And so often children would need to get across to get over to the school, or people to the market or something like this. So that's why it was important for them to have wire footbridges. If they didn't have a wire one, they would just use bamboo. Bamboo grows very tall, but this is so much safer. And something that you saw a lot of there was the landing mats that was used in World War II. The metal, they used it for many different things. Sometimes just for a fence or for just to get across a gully. This is bamboo. It was hard for us to get a picture because it's so tall and it was so dark down in here. But I'm standing down here and I'm only about this tall.
Bamboo has many uses over there. Like here they put it across. We were doing surveying for a wire bridge that they wanted to cross up higher, but we needed some measurements on the other side, so they put a few bamboo across.
And as you can see, Art didn't walk across that. They walked across with their bare feet. They do have some very intricately made bridges from bamboo and vines. Here's another one. This was over the Wagi River. Art measured it was at least 50 feet down to the water. And a mother tied her baby to the back before she went across. Now here's where we were asked to come to do a wire footbridge, and this was what was there. And as we got to the coast to walk through this village, there was a school for 7th and 8th graders. And these are 7th and 8th graders that volunteered to help us carry our bedroll, which was this. We'd always have our little foam mat and then a string bag with a change of clothes and a little snack food when we would go into the village. Walking 6 and 8 hours over steep mountains, we carried as little as we possibly could. But children in Papua New Guinea only are required to go through the 6th grade, and very few go on to 7th and 8th grade like these. There's only a few 7th, 8th grade schools in all of Papua New Guinea.
Another reason for these people to go with us was to show us the way.
We
didn't have a map to show where the path was. We always had some of the nationals with us to show us where to go. Now we're getting ready to build the bridge, have all the materials bought, and took them by boat to the nearest village on the coast. And then we got a helicopter to transfer the material over the mountain. So we loaded it in slings. The helicopter takes off. Dorothy was riding along on this trip. It took us, 8 or 9 trips to get all parts in for a bridge. But instead of walking for 7 or 8 hours, the helicopter could make it across one way in 7 minutes.
It was really exciting for me to be up there and make this trip in 9 minutes that just a few weeks before we had walked all day to get there. And then the last load, they wanted Art to be sure and come in too. And so here we are. We're in the village and all the supplies are there, and they are the happiest group of people because now they can have a wire footbridge and the supplies are there. They did carry in some of them. It was required, and they did get a grant from Lutheran World Federation for this bridge because it was an area where a lot of people walked through to get to the lay, and also to get to a hospital, and it was urgent. And so they were very happy to get this, but a requirement was that they all do the work themselves. But the government hired this man to be the supervisor while it was being built, and then Art would just go in periodically to supervise and check on it.
Now they're all ready to start work, so they're celebrating and they're chewing their bulai or betel nut. They have the lime in a little jar, and then they dip kind of a pepper thing, they dip into that and chew it, and then the betel nut, take a bite of that.
And his mouth is starting to get red.
And you see this fellow too, how red his lips are. It gives him a little bit of a high.
It gives him a little high. Mm-hmm. And they also like to smoke, and when we would bring in newspapers, they would be so happy because they would roll up newspapers with a little tobacco and they'd have a smoke. Now they're starting to do the wire footbridge, and they're very, very excited. The Art brought in some buckets, plastic buckets. The women picked those up and they started carrying sand for cement from a stream, and the men are starting to dig for the anchoring of the bridge.
See, this? A lot of times they carry the sand in a bag. Well, these billums are.
She's got a rice bag in there. They do sometimes buy rice from a market. And she's got filled up that rice inside that bag, and she's got all that weight on her head. And while she's working, she's got her baby in a billum string bag, or which they call a billum, hanging in a tree. And sometimes the children are kind of help take care of the baby hanging in the tree. And they do that a lot while they're working in the garden, too. Now, Art flew back in, had a chance to get a helicopter ride to check on this wire footbridge project, and here they're all busy working. And now they're putting up the tower. Art planned the tower, and it was built in lay, and then they had to disassemble it in order to helicopter it in. But they did put it together before they helicoptered it and make sure that all the parts fit. And now when they get ready for when something like this is finished, they said, you must come back and we will kill a pig. They only killed a pig for a feast or for a wedding or that this project was done. And then they will heat these stones, and they're very, very hot. And then they will dig a hole in the ground, just like a big bowl in the ground, and line it with banana leaves, and they'll put in the sweet potatoes. They also grow yams. Notice how big yams grow in Papua New Guinea with all their rain.
They should have put a few out there.
And here they are getting all this ready to put into the moo, that they call the moo-moo. Then they enter. Put the meat in between this and lots of greenery. There's some certain kinds of plants that are very edible and good. And then they cover it, put a little bit of water on it for steam, and it's kind of like a pressure cooker. And then they put banana leaves over it, and in a few hours, they'll have a feast. And while it's cooking, sometimes you see men sitting around like this playing cards. And here it's all cooked now, so now they are getting all the food out, and they're ready for the big feast.
So they're educated to a degree if they can play cards?
Yes, yep. to a degree they are. And at this village, they put up a table for us. Usually we sit on the ground, but this particular village, they put up a table for us guests. But notice they do cook rice, and this was... the cow, and they did have hot tea and their meat. And now they're getting ready to celebrate. The premier of the province has come. The bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Papua New Guinea has just come in with a helicopter. And the neighboring people have come in from other villages, and a lot of the women have put wreaths of flowers in their hair, and they're ready now to have a lot of speeches and welcomes, and the bishop had the opening prayer and devotions, They decorated the footbridge with palm branches and flowers and welcomed us. It was really something to see how happy they were. Here's a close-up of the finished wire footbridge. Wire mesh, mesh floor, and then the sides mesh so that the children don't fall. And while we were in this village, we took this picture. It's an aid post station. So when people there, you can get malaria. And so we have nurses over there teaching them a cleanliness and so forth. We were saying this village needs some help. But the government does train people to give these shots for malaria and to treat their tropical sores and so forth. But you see, they live so far from a doctor. There are very few doctors, so they do need aid post stations and nurses to train them. Here we are now going into the Highlands to check for a water supply. They are wearing these Highlands caps that the women make. But notice the tall vegetation we had to go through. And there again, they're using their big bush knives so that Art can survey here. And here we were into the village, and he's checking for this water supply. And we have the whole village as audience. And now it's under construction. And this was the man here that was in charge of this project.
There again, the government hired him to work with us on the project. Put in a water supply tank up above the village a ways, and it was flown in by pieces, and this fellow here riveted the piece together and soldered and everything. That's it. This man here was a village leader, and during World War II, he was one of the carriers for the soldiers over there.
It was real interesting to sit in the evenings and talk to these people about how it was there during World War II. Now the project is finished. They invited us to come back, and they too had a big celebration. They're excited. They have water running in the village now from faucets. And so here they had us come to the edge of the village, and they met us with their headpieces on their heads, and notice all their drums. And they are praising God for the gift of the water supply. And it is really something to see when they praise God, they just look up to the heavens, and they really are intent about praising God. It is really a witness. And notice how they adorn their bodies when they are celebrating with things from nature. And as a gift, we gave them, Art took a lot of pictures of the whole series of while doing these projects, and then we would give them pictures that we took of the project and of us being with them when we were there, and they really cherished pictures. And there was a church in Boulder, Colorado that sent these globes that were the world globes, because they could use that as a device to think of us as part of them in this world. And we would hang a cross on the top, and as we would leave the village, that we would say that was a symbol of that they could hang in their church to be an expression of our oneness with them. And this is where we went into another village, and they gave us leis of flowers. And this woman is from the Lutheran World Federation. She's a woman from India, but she was a secretary in Geneva, Switzerland.
This is a hydraulic ram. That is something that we were trying to get more of in Papua New Guinea, because these machines will pump water without any the outside source besides water. The water coming into it creates pressure in this dome and then forces water out through a pipe here. They will deliver from 90 to 95% of the water that comes in, depending on how high it has to be raised. rather than have a diesel engine or gasoline engine, they need something like this. They don't have money to buy the fuel, and if the motor doesn't operate, well, they can't do anything about it. It's just the kind of machine that is best for them, but we never did get one actually completed while we were there. We had two sites where they were working on the project, but we left a little too early.
This young man was working with Art, and so he was going to complete the project. And they also have a man from Germany now that is following up on the projects that we didn't get finished. But it was very interesting for to see. Art worked also with these other two other young men that were trained to finish some of the projects that we surveyed for but didn't get finished.
That's a motorcycle back there?
Yeah.
That's a motorcycle back there?
Yes.
Yeah, this fellow from Germany that was with Lutheran Development Service, the finance person, had a motorcycle to get around in.
And a pastor from Minnesota gave money for Art to buy tools for this young man so that he could finish some of the art projects that we had.
Actually, he brought it over. Somebody in the congregation gave it to him to give to somebody in Papua New Guinea that could use it for a good purpose. And
he was very happy to give these tools.
Him some while he gave it to him.
This is coffee in Papua New Guinea. That is one of their major export crops now, and what is a good thing and it also is not good in the fact that some villages are planting so much poppy now that they barely have enough food for their own village people. And so that is something that the Lutheran Development Service was telling them to be careful about. This is, they often sell the whole bean like this. They get more money if they take off the hull and dry it. But many times they would do that. Another problem is they have so little money that they really don't know what to do with it when they do have it. So part of our job was to tell them that if they needed a wire a development project, that they could use this money now for a water supply project in the village. Many villagers are so used to just asking the church, well, will you give us money for what we need? But now that they have coffee, we need to help them to learn that they need to pay for their own projects.
Women here are carrying coffee down the hill and across the bridge here, and still quite a ways on, then they get to the highway. Very few highways in the country, but there was one main one going up the valley and up through a lot of the coffee country, so they would get down to the road and sell to these coffee buyers. It would be weighed there and they would be given their money, and that was it.
And here they're growing cocoa, and so you would often see people sitting around under the trees taking the pod out of the cocoa, like that. And as we would hike into villages, many times somebody would climb up a coconut tree when we would get to a village or en route, and we were hot, and we could drink the refreshing drink from it.
Some areas they grew quite a bit of tea. Up towards Mount Hog, and there were some tea plantations.
And sugar cane. Papua New Guinea grows its own sugar. The sugar is not nearly as refined as ours is. It's a little more gray, but they do have their own sugar.
And beer has come into the country.
Those are Australians cases of beer.
Have lots of beer, and all the Papua New Guineans drink it, and they don't know when to stop, and that's really getting to be a big problem.
Who brought that in?
The Australians.
Australians?
Yeah. The Lutheran shipping is hauling it along the coast, and that's kind of a big controversy there, whether Lutheran shipping, it's a big money maker for them, but what are they going to do?
And young people now are starting to go more and more to the big city like Leigh or Port Moresby, And then they don't find a job, and then they live in a slum place like this, and then they start going into crime and alcohol and so forth. So that is one of the sad things about Papua New Guinea now. This is where women are carrying vegetables to the market. And notice how they'll carry two big or big billums full of vegetables. And children from little on up start carrying billums to help their mother.
They often carry umbrellas with them because, like she said, it does rain a lot.
And if they don't have an umbrella, they just use a banana leaf.
When we get to the market, and we went to the market about every Saturday. It was open every day. They had all kinds of vegetables and fruits.
Many different kinds of coconuts and a lot of things we had never eaten before. And this is how they carry their babies. These are babies in the belly. These ladies are on their way to church. And you get a closer view of the baby in the billum. They are very comfortable in that. When the walking movement often walks them to sleep. But there is such a contrast there. Notice this lady, she's gotten clothes from some bale of clothes, and she's wearing a grass skirt. And here is a water buffalo they're training to. They do not have large animals in Papua New Guinea. And some people are even afraid of a water buffalo.
These are just introduced, so people are being trained how to use them. And the water buffalo also being trained.
This was our front yard, and those were our banana trees.
Somebody asked about the height of these people. Because this man was
unusually short,
but he was much shorter than I am.
He gave Art this bow and these arrows just as a gift for coming.
Is he kissing them?
Uh-huh. Giving him a big hug. Mm-hmm. And they gave me this string bag. Many of the villages gave us string bags like this. And said, take this and remember us by this. And before we would leave any village, they would line up like this and shake their hands. We would shake everybody's hand, and they would also, all the children would stand right with their mom and daddy to shake our hand too. And some of those hands would be very, very rough from all their gardening. And here they gave me a tail of a tree kangaroo and bird of paradise feathers when I came into this village. And I was not allowed to bring the bird of paradise feathers back with me.
Mm-hmm. It's a bird of paradise. It's in a wildlife sanctuary, though, by a river sanctuary.
We walked under some of these very, very tall trees, and we could hear the bird of paradise, but they were so high up there we couldn't see them.